Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to the Good Word, y'all. We have a Good Word here on Yahoo Sports, part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. You can also catch us on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. If you are watching us on YouTube, you see my guest. He is a Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer. He is also a former Yahoo Sports writer for the NBA. He's a Yahoo Sports alum, and he is currently a senior NBA writer for ESPN and Anscape. He is also one of my closest friends, my big brother, the great Mark Spears. How you doing, Mark?
Man, it's good to talk to you. It's good to see you, man, because we talk on the phone, but, you know, we don't FaceTime each other.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And I see you got this Idris Elba, like, goatee beard going on, man. Is that the new look?
You saw me at the Hall of Fame, Mark. I had this at the Hall of Fame.
But I mean, I'm just really like noticing this thing you got going now. It's all right.
It's called growing up and maturing. You know what I mean?
You know what, Vinny? I'm a little jealous because and I'm finishing making my coffee here, so don't mind me. Because I can't grow a beard. I don't know if you knew that.
I figured you probably couldn't if you just kept the baby face the whole time.
I mean, it does make me look young, but I can't grow a beard. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Well, you used to have a goatee and a mustache in your younger days when you were covering the Denver Nuggets.
Terrible. I'm not proud of that time. In fact, shout out to my Denver barber, Stanley Stewart, who like cut it off one day.
Really?
He just cut it off, and I haven't had it since.
He just made an executive decision and said, "You don't need this no more."
Yeah. But I love you, man, and I'm glad you're on this platform. You know, giving your good word. So let me shut up and let you do your show.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Look, this is free flowing for everybody who listens. They know, even though we got a script, we don't have a script. You know what I mean? Like, we make sure that we touch on the things we need to touch on, but we want to have a easy conversation. And me and Mark talk like 3 or 4 times a week anyway. So this won't be a rehash, because I made sure that when we last talked, we didn't go over any of this stuff because I wanted it to be fresh and new. Mark is in Las Vegas
about basketball anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. We very rarely talk about basketball. That's a good point, Mark. We talk about like the business of stuff. We don't talk about actual basketball. Mark, you're in Vegas for like G League, right?
Yeah, no, the G League Ignite, oddly, are playing 2 exhibition games this week.
Okay.
It's Perth. And I'm working on a project.
Of course.
You know, and so I came to see the Ignite play last night, and I'm going to go to their media day today. And Vinny, they got like 5 guys that could be first-round picks.
Okay.
Some say lottery. I don't know about lottery, but got to see them last night, and they're loaded with talent. And then also, I got to get the kid's name, but there's also a kid from Perth who was at Overtime Elite. I'll get his name for you. But 7-1, moves up and down the floor like Durant, plays small forward. I probably saw 6, well, one of them's hurt, but there was probably 6 players on that floor that could be top 20 picks.
That's pretty impressive right now.
Yeah, so it's odd to watch some basketball right now.
Mm-hmm.
When I went and sat there and watched this, you know, I was here when Wembanyama played his game against the Ignite.
Right.
Much later than this. I believe it was in November. But from what I saw, I mean, the Ignite is still churning them out, man. They still got some unbelievable talent.
No, they seem to have a pretty good program going there as far as kids who don't want to go to college, who don't want to deal with the whole NIL thing or playing in that program, want to go straight to what pro NBA sets are like and pro NBA coaching, that sort of thing. That makes perfect sense. And Spears, it brings me to
one of your most recent articles in talking to Ben Simmons, who came up through the conventional route, but you know, he went to, you know, one of the academies in Florida, went to LSU, started in the NBA, and now, you know, 27. Not that we've forgotten about Ben Simmons, Mark, but you had a pretty long interview with him, and it's almost like we have forgotten about Ben Simmons and what type of impactful player, you know, that he can be. It seems as if that back injury has been a catalyst for a lot of things that have gone wrong. There's been a whole bunch of other stuff to go wrong with Ben Simmons. But do you feel like the back injury is like the most important thing that has happened to him that sort of prevented him from being even the player that he was before all the mental stuff started coming up, before all the can he shoot, will he shoot, all that stuff started coming up?
Yeah, first of all, don't ever make the coffee in the hotel. This is terrible. That was a mistake on my part. One thing that stood out to me when we broke bread in Miami was he like sat down. He said, man, you know how good it feels to just sit down and not have any pain or drive when you don't have, and you don't have any pain. And I felt like I was talking to a senior citizen who just got some kind of surgery or something like that. And so, you know, we had a long discussion about how he, looking back, shouldn't have played last season. I think he was trying to like prove everybody wrong and be miraculous when he was actually in a ton of pain. Cause like when you watch him, like, I'm like, he can't even make a layup right now. Like, it didn't just, something just wasn't right.
Right.
And I do think he put himself in a bad position because he was already in a position of, oh, how's he going to disappoint us today? Right. And so by forcing himself to go out there when he wasn't ready, and from what I, you know, people say he said similar things a year ago about how he was about to come back, which probably added to the pressure of why he forced himself to come back. Like it was just trying to watch him play last year was just painful to see. But he feels now that this is the best he's felt in 2 years. He's been working out about 5 days a week, about 8 hours a day. He's now probably at a point now, I believe, where he's supposed to be doing 3-on-3. He believes that he will be able to be 100% by the time the season starts. I don't know if he plays in the first couple preseason games, but it's a progression. But I've been around him a lot in the last couple of years. It's, you know, I was there when he did his press conference with the Nets. There's a difference. It's like his swagger's back. I told him, Vinny, he didn't get the reference. I said, it appears to me like you're Popeye with his spinach. Like you, the way you're talking, it's like, you know, it's like kind of, one of his friends tried to explain it to him. But he just, he had a confidence. He had a swagger. He had like a vengeance kind of thing in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm healthy, I'm going to be an all-star caliber player again. And so while he has had some mental health issues, he seemed like somebody that was ready to, you know, kick butt and take names. So there was no, to his credit, I didn't sense any bitterness towards anybody else. He certainly has read all the disdain and the hate. And, you know, I think there's some, certainly some pain that comes with that.
Right.
But ultimately, he's still like 27. And he feels like now that he's healthy, just as long as he's healthy, he could be back. And he told me that just out of nowhere, I wanted to work out at the University of Miami. He did, I guess you call it the East Bay Funk Dunk, as they call it out here in the Bay, where you put the ball through your legs and dunked it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think as somebody who had a bad leg injury, you know, when you rehab, until you do something, you don't believe you could do it, right? You're like,
yeah,
you have apprehension. So I think he like did it in front of his family members in the gym, I think, to not only prove it to himself, but to prove to them that he's on the mend mentally and physically. So I'm really excited about him. And I don't know that he'll ever be some 3-point shooter. And I don't know that he needs to be. Like, there's enough people in the NBA to shoot 3-pointers. Right.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you bring up some interesting points that I want to hit on. The last thing about 3-point shooting. My thing is with him on the shooting is just shoot from somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to shoot from 23, 25 feet. Yeah. Be a threat from 17. Be a threat from 15.
And he's shown that he can hit the mid-range jumper.
He just got to take it. He doesn't take it.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, he there was this swagger I felt about him that was different. I hope it – you know, we're not supposed to root for people, but I hope that he's back. And he – one thing I think Jacque Vaughn has done a great job of is going to Miami pretty regularly to watch him work out, to watch him play, to build a rapport. Because when I think Nash got fired, they didn't have a rapport.
Right.
They didn't really know each other. I think they got much closer. And Ben said he expects to be the starting point guard.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing to me is, what did you take when you heard that part? Because when you look at Ben Simmons and the player that he was,
yeah.
If you're not putting pressure on the defense either by – you know, the threat of the three-point shot or driving to the rim, you know, with the possibility of getting fouled, which is another thing for him. Can you play point guard in today's NBA? And for him to say that means one of those things has to change, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I actually like him a lot with the ball in his hands when he's healthy, pushing the pace. You know, in today's NBA, you know, it's not out of normal to see a 6'11 dude push the ball up.
Right.
So, I think he's a great facilitator. That's when he's at his best. And they have guys, Nets got some guys that have no problem shooting the ball.
That's true. Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges.
Yeah. As long as they, Cam Thomas.
Thomas. Oh, yeah. He don't need to be facilitated for. He's going to take shots no matter where he get the ball at.
So, I'm obviously we're curious, like, if he's going to shoot any threes, how is he going to be at the free throw line, those kind of things. But because I did ask him about that play in Philly that everybody talked about, and I think he kind of insinuated a little bit, like, the other guy was a better free throw shooter. So instead of me going up and potentially getting fouled, I gave it to him, so that's still a hurdle that he has to show and prove on. But, I mean, if he's healthy, he was a three-time All-Star. He was an All-NBA player. I think there's a great redemption story there, and I hope he figures it out this time.
Yeah, I mean, there were some things in the piece that the vulnerability that I guess the way, Mark, that you, knowing this from being your friend, people can say things to you that they don't necessarily normally say to things. Like, you have this big comfort level that you just allow people to sort of be vulnerable. And I felt like even him bringing up the point about the dunk against Atlanta, or the dunk that should have been against Atlanta, showed that there's a mental hurdle that he has to get over. And to me, that's the biggest thing for him. What do you think he stands right now? Not asking you to play amateur psychologist, but what do you think he sits right now as far as his mental journey with everything, at least relative to where he was when he didn't want to play for Philly anymore and it was hard for him to even get back on the floor mentally?
He was in a surprisingly great place. Like, he's talking about, I love Philly, and if I was to go anywhere else, not that I'm trying to get traded, that's where I'd want to go. Which probably caught a lot of people in Philly by surprise. Like,
yeah,
you want to come back here? Do we want you back here? But
right,
So one thing that he's doing, and Vinny, I like to fish.
Yes. And
so I delved into him fishing a little bit, and he was telling me, like, fishing has taught him about patience. It's called, helped him relax. Like, he goes fishing all the time. This dude goes scuba diving. And so he's like, before he was probably too eager, where now, like, he feels like he has to be patient. Like, when you're trying to get something big in the sea, right? Like,
it just
doesn't happen. So I think he's trying to be patient with, his progress, but he sees progress. He's quietly shown, like, he's getting hit now too. I don't know if you saw that, but I watched some video where he's like, he's not playing 5-on-5, but when he's playing 2-on-2, playing ones, he's getting hit. So I think those things have been giving him confidence. Mostly, I think it's the lack of pain.
Mm.
And I asked him, I'm like, why didn't you say anything? And he just said, in the sense that he's gotten tired of trying to prove to people where he is. So I think his It sounds like his give a damn meter has gotten to be really small, which in this state of social media, I think is valuable for not only an athlete, but any human.
Right.
So just if there was something I was impressed with, it was this confidence that was back, like the swagger that was back. I know I keep saying that, but it's to me, that's important because if he's not there mentally, then the physical is not going to matter. And mentally, he had this mental strength that I see in elite players in this league.
Okay.
And I've talked to him in recent years, and I couldn't say that. But he seems now like, he said he's like, he's ready to kill in this league again. You don't just say that if your swagger's not back, if your confidence isn't back. So I'm like, we got to see big things from him, right?
He done wrote a big check. And I mean, thing, Mark, because you brought it up a few minutes ago when you said you had an injury in college and you know how hard that is to mentally come back from. Yeah. But just the physical part of it, Mark, there doesn't seem to be a lot of guys who come back from major back injuries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Brooke Lopez, I felt like he had one, but then he sort of changed his game. But Brooke Lopez changes his game like every 3 months. You know what I mean? Like he went from being a post player.
Like when he plays, it looks like his back hurts, even though it may not be hurting. It's just like, just looks stiff.
Yeah. Is that a concern that there's not a huge precedent for guys who've had debilitating back injuries to be able to come back and be a better version of themselves?
Yeah, no, with him, you're always going to be wondering, like, because that's one of those scary injuries where it could just flare up at any time, right?
Yeah.
They also get the best of the best. Like, it ain't like me going to my insurance and seeing somebody like he's going to see the best specialists in the world. But to his point, like, just him saying, like, appreciate the little things like just being able to sit in a chair with no pain, being able to drive with no pain. He was saying that last season he couldn't drive and he couldn't sit. And he remembers after a game, some game, just trying to walk to the bus. The other guy who I remember, Michael Porter Jr., when he got drafted, walking with him after he got drafted, and he was walking like the Tin Man. Like, I was like, whoa, like, and he was, we've talked about it later. Like, he put on a good face.
Yeah.
You know, that night, it was draft night. So he was trying to put like lipstick on a pig, I guess. Right. But
yeah.
He was definitely in pain. And so, I mean, I think only Mike knows it. I mean, Mike and Ben, only they know their bodies better than anybody else.
Right.
So if you are in pain or if it isn't right, like, why say it is? Like, what? So, like, he must be in a really, really good place physically. Because, and I'll say this too, man, his body looked like he was trying to be a superhero or something. Like,
okay.
You could tell, like, he's put on some muscle.
Okay.
Tell he's in great shape. You could tell he's been working out.
Like, okay.
He looked like somebody that, you know, like you could sense that he has been putting the time in.
It's funny because now, Mark, we get to talk about the thing that I really want to talk to you about.
Okay.
You know what that is, right?
Shoes?
No. Mark, you're being a wise ass. Mark is talking about my background. The thing I really want to talk to Mark about, if you guys haven't checked it out, it's called The Conversations Project. It's on Hulu. And it's Mark. It's Chef David Lawrence. It's, what's the lady's name? Elaine? I can't remember her last name. Yeah.
Put some respect on Elaine's name, man.
I couldn't remember how to pronounce her last name. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And it's you three are hosts. And it's basically a show built around a three-course meal with Chef David Lawrence, who's like, have I met David before? I feel like I went out to dinner with David before.
I think you met. You might have.
Okay, the one thing, guys, about Mark is that if you go out of town with Mark, especially during the playoffs, he's going to have you around an eclectic group of people. It may be a rapper, a DJ, a musician, an artist. It's going to be people from all different walks of life, and you're going to have great food and great conversations because Mark knows exactly where everything is in every city, right? He's like the number one liaison. I'm like, hey, Mark, I am in Timbuktu. Where do I go to eat? Like, Mark knows everything about any place on the map. So when I see the Conversations Project, which is filmed in New York, and it's you three plus eclectic group of people who don't really have any connection, and you find this commonality and you have these great conversations. Mark, A, what spurned this for you? Yeah. And B, what was that process like of even selecting people? You had like, you know, Roxanne Shanté and Jim Jones and Roy Wood. You always had a comedian there to lighten things up, but there was like an eclectic group of people. I felt like it was really, really critical to have great conversations.
No, this whole show that it's on Hulu, and if everybody hasn't seen it, it came out on, you know, 2 Mondays ago. And I'm really, really proud of this, man, as a, what they say, growth. Right. Like,
yes,
I'm always, you know, Vinny, trying to do something out of the box, something different. And my boss from Manscaped, Raina Kelly, said a couple of years ago that we were going to get connected to Hulu and that Hulu was looking for some projects. And so 2 years ago, myself, Chef David Lawrence, who's a good friend of mine, who's amazing. We were at his house drinking some wine, watching soccer. Eating this charcuterie board, and I don't even know if she knows this, Maria Taylor, she called and she was saying that her and her husband were going to Napa and they needed some places to go from a wine standpoint and also from a dinner standpoint. And Chef was like, you get these calls all the time? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, we should do something with it. And that's how we came up with the idea of doing a television show, which initially was, you know, bringing athletes to vineyards, interviewing them, and I would interview them in the vineyard, and bringing athletes to wineries. I would interview them in the vineyard in the tasting room, and Chef would bring them in the kitchen, curate a meal based on who they are as a person. And then at the end, we'd have a round table dinner with that celebrity, us, and a couple other like people of random excellence.
Right.
And so we did a pilot at Charles Crook Winery with Terrence Mann. Clippers assistant Brian Shaw came, his wife, Chef Nikki, W. Kamau Bell, the comedian, activist, and also Brene Royale, who's a Black woman in the wine industry. And what I was kind of looking for was a Black iron sharpens iron dinner. Kind of pains me to see a lot of the television, not now, but for years, where, you know, Black people are always seen and often seen in a negative light, or just seen in an athletic light or an entertaining light, right? We're never seen in a very intelligent light. And so I remember watching the Cosby Show when it first came out, and they're like, can't be a black doctor married to a Black lawyer. And I was like, I was around Black people like that. Why can't that be? And it was just, I remember that being kind of sad to me, like that. A lot of society felt that way, that was ludicrous that there could be such a couple. But, you know, I'm a big Mo Better Blues fan. I was inspired by Mo Better Blues and Boomerang and yes. Love Jones and, you know, The Best Man. And those are the kind of folks I'm around, Black folks I'm around, like very intelligent, successful people with different genres. And as you mentioned, those are the kind of dinners I had. So I wanted to create something with Chef that basically takes the world to dinner with that kind of group of Black people like we go to dinner with, right? And have amazing food, have amazing wine, and have amazing conversation. So we ended up doing a pilot, and Anscape and Hulu liked the dinner and decide to just like center around the dinner. And then they added Elaine Welteroth, who's from Project Runway and Teen Vogue, as a third host. And man, I think it's an amazing show where I think the smart thing that we did, I don't know if we fell into it, but yeah, we have a celebrity. We have the hosts who are pretty known, but we also have like an astronaut, or as he called it, an Afronaut, right?
Yeah.
We have a financial advisor. We have, you know, you mentioned some of the celebrity names, but we have, you know, a professor, You know, we had a transgender model. Like, we have all these different people. So I don't think the table feels like intimidating or feels like to the viewer that you can't be a part of that table. Like, you feel like, man, I could have dinner with this group, you know? Then every episode, we also showcase a black wine. And I think there's a lot of really good black wines out there. Vinny, you're a wino now. You're
yes, thanks to you.
You know, story for another day. But I think that I'm proud of not only having these black dinners where we bring up different topics with each course, but also we highlight a different black winery in every episode. And so I think through the course of those six episodes, now that people have seen it, it's felt good, man, hearing people talk about, like, saying, like, they really enjoyed the conversation. There were things that made them laugh, made them cry, made them think, made them wish that they were at the table, and had them continue the conversation. And I just know that a lot of black people are watching it, and I need our people to support, but I need everybody to support. And I've had some white people call me and say, man, I learned a lot from watching this show. Somebody said that the call I heard was that I learned more about black people during that show than in 65 years of life, which from a white man. So
wow.
It's to me an Image Award type of show. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. And I'm really, really like proud of it. We'll see what direction it goes. I'm anticipating a second season, but like as a sports journalist, man, I'm blessed to have made the Hall of Fame recently. And I'm like, to have made the Hall of Fame and then to have a TV show out that ain't got nothing to do with sports is like still kind of crazy to me. Like this actually happened.
It's kind of surreal. And watching the show, and I've watched all six episodes, and it's not just, it's a show that includes black people, but you don't feel like it's excluding anybody. You don't feel like it's a show that not everybody can watch. Of course, it's black topics. It's people of mixed race talking about the challenges of being with mixed race, like Allie Love, who yeah. is the, she's the Peloton in Brooklyn Nets. You know, she's really outgoing. And then in that setting, she looks really vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like there's the rapper Shine, who's not going to be the prime minister of Belize, right? Talking about, you know, reparations and what that looked like to him, and the role of the black church, all these different quote unquote taboo black topics, but that are for everybody to be able to hear. Mark, when those topics came up, was that something like, hey, you got a list today? We're gonna sit down and we're gonna talk about these topics, or is it, let's just see where this conversation goes over wine and over an appetizer and over a full course meal? Like, how did those things come up?
Well, the topics, some of the producers, we had a lot of young producers. The majority of people of the staff that worked on the show were African-American or people of color, a lot of women. So we had some interesting young producers who came up with some of the topics, and we would talk about it. And some of them I liked, some of them I didn't feel great about. I did worry that I was like, we got to have some happy topics too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because I kind of was worried that some of the stuff we were talking about, like, boy, you're worn out by the time we get to the end of this dinner, man. Like,
right.
I almost want to uplift somebody in the end. But even in some of the darker topics, we still found a way to laugh, which I think is an amazing trait of most of black people, that like you got to laugh to keep from crying. Like,
yes.
We still find some humor in pain. And I think that you see that, like, there's a comedian named Josh Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who I mean, if he's in your town, or I think he has a comedy special on Prime, go watch him, man. He's hilarious. Or it's on Peacock.
Okay.
But he even said stuff about, like, anytime it got really tense, he would say a joke. And I think that's like you mentioned the comedian thing. That's a good thing about, you know, having a comedian there. And I think me and David think we're comedians too, Chef. So we kind of like, even when it gets tense, the mood got lightened up in a good way, to kind of kind of make it from being a dark dinner, so to speak.
No, it was funny that Mark normally, and not to go super deep into our conversations, but Mark, when we go out to dinner, you're like the center of attention. You have a personality that people gravitate towards. Everybody knows you. You're usually the common denominator amongst all these different people. Like, you've introduced me to different people from different walks of life that I probably wouldn't have known otherwise. So you're the common denominator. You're the person that everybody gravitates to. Here, you're the person that keeps the conversation moving. You know what I mean? Like, you're adding the joke in about, I think it was like being in a, going, talking about the role of the black church. And you were like, man, they asked me to speak in tongues and I was in there beatboxing, you know, that sort of thing. Like, you kept it light and you kept it moving. Did you feel like that was the role that you were going to have to play? Or did you kind of just fall into that throughout the course of all these people telling all these great, sometimes funny stories, sometimes deep stories, sometimes emotional stories? Yeah. How did you figure out your role in that?
Well, no, that's a great question, man. We when we filmed, the dinners were about 75 minutes long.
Mm.
So it was funny. One of my cousins texted me. He's like, man, can y'all just put out the whole dinner? I know there's more.
Right, right. The uncut version.
Yeah, like just the whole dinner. He's like, I want to listen to the whole conversation. And that's the one thing that pains me a little bit, was like, there's a lot of great stuff that was, you know, gets left on the table. And I don't know that people want to watch an hour dinner, but I think the time is a good time. But it's still, I'm glad my cousin sent me that. Kester, thank you. You know, kind of. You know, makes you wanting for more, which I like. But, you know, I felt like in a lot of ways, me and Elaine were point guards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I had to put my journalism hat on and almost sometimes take the spotlight, not the spotlight was on me, but get other people to talk. Like, yeah, if you were able to watch the whole thing, because obviously things get edited, there were times when I noticed that this person wasn't speaking a lot. And I had researched them, just like I research everybody I interview. And I was like, well, weren't you connected in this way? Like asking Shine about his mental health in prison, right? And stuff like that, not leaving any questions on the table. And so in a lot of ways, if you watch it, you can see that I'm kind of point guarding, that Elaine's kind of point guarding. And even David gets into that a little bit too, where we're trying to like get this person engaged and this person engaged. Cause I do think for some guests, man, that, and Vinny, I mean, I don't know how you ever felt, but like the table got a little intimidating sometimes to some people. We had one guest who, I won't say who it is, but before we started filming, they were very nervous about feeling like, you know, were they as educated as they needed to be for that table?
Mm.
And if I said who it was, you watch it again, you'd be like, yeah, I could tell they were a little nervous, kind of like trying hard, you know?
Yeah.
But that's I think, the beauty of those dinners is like, you know, and I mess with you, I'm like, man, you got to put your phone down, man. Put your phone down, brother. Like, be in this moment right now.
Mark is the king of, like, literally, I'm not speaking out of turn. Mark would tell me to sit next to him at dinner, for one. And then I think it's purposely for the reason of, I'm going to grab your phone out of your hand if I see you scrolling Twitter or texting or whatever it is. Honestly, I'm just checking for like news or whatever it is, you know, something work related.
Like crossword or something like that.
It's words with friends. It's like my competitive creative juices. But either way. But Mark is literally the person that's going to like tell you, hey, engage. And I'm always the person that will sit back and listen, because it's always like these really interesting ass people that we're with.
Yeah.
And you don't want to take up space. Like, it's restaurateurs and everything else. It's literally people that I probably never would have met in life if not for Mark.
Yeah.
And I just want to sit there and just listen. You know what I mean? Like, I may ask a question or two, or if someone asks me something, but 9 times out of 10, I'm the youngest person there. So I'm going to do more listening than talking.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, like,
you snatched the phone out of my hand.
We went
Mark.
To dinner in the finals in Denver, and we had Tom Joyner at the table.
Yes, we did.
and great Bill Roden, the amazing New York, former New York Times writer, landscape writer, and Mike Wilbon, me, you, Jerry Brewer.
Jerry Brewer from the Washington Post. Yeah, that was a great, and that was a great night.
That was a conversation where I just sat and listened to the OGs talk. Right?
Tom Joyner and Wilbon talking about 1970 Chicago.
I mean, 1960 Chicago.
1960 Chicago. I wasn't trying to make them too old, but there you go, Mike.
They were talking about, yeah.
It's like a time. It's a time capsule.
Yeah.
It's a time capsule.
Bernie Banks.
But no, it's funny. There you go. See, that's the whole old Chicago thing. Now, it's funny, Mark. I would say Roy Wood, the comedian, who's been on a bunch of, you know, I think he does the Daily Show on Comedy Central.
Should be the host.
Yeah, he should be the host. Roy, he's really, really good. And he talked about having a son and saying, what do I teach my son about dealing with the police if he may never have to deal with them in the same way that I do? I felt like those were conversations that even if you couldn't relate, that those were questions that you may have. And I felt like those topics were being facilitated in a way that even if it were in a time capsule, it was still something that you would, if you didn't know any better, you would think that show was on CNN or something like that, but you were being entertained at the same time.
But it also for the viewer, that's why I want people of all races to watch it. Like when white people go to dinner, are they talking about that? I mean, maybe us and
not about dealing with the police. Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe us and maybe people in Hispanic culture are talking about that. And that's sad that that's a conversation, but I wanted everybody to be able to see into that room and hear what we talk about. Like the things that to talk about, all right, make sure you keep your hands down. You know, make sure you look the officer in the eyes. Don't grab for anything. Like those are conversations that the richest of black people have to have with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the poorest of people from, you know, white communities don't have to have those conversations.
And no, they don't.
So it's just like, no matter how much success you have, you still can get reduced because of the color of your skin. But I think that that's the thing. Like, if you're not black, but then you hear these conversations, it kind of wakes you up, right? It kind of maybe you can help be an ally to change that.
Mark, don't say woke unless Florida would get this whole podcast canceled. Okay. You said wake up. Don't say woke or unless, you know, this whole podcast will be canceled.
ain't gonna change the meaning of that word to me, man.
Not at all. I'm just messing with you. Yeah. I'm just messing with you. Yeah. We are back with Mark Spears on the Good Word Podcast with Goodwill. Mark Spears, of course, senior writer at Anscape and host of the Conversations Project on Hulu. Mark, of course, if people don't know, is based in the Bay Area. So, of course, we got to talk to Golden State Warriors.
What happened down here, man?
Torn tendon from popping my knuckles.
Are you serious?
I wish I was joking. I popped my knuckles and apparently tore a tendon that goes all the way from my elbow to the tip of my finger.
You got to come up with a better story than that.
I wish it was a better story than that.
You dunk, and the dude was mad and grabbed your arm in the air and tore a tendon. That's your new story.
That's my new story. Nobody else will hear that, right?
You got to come up with a better story than that. And then after I hit the dude, you know what I'm saying? Like, I noticed my hand felt different. But what he did, you know, he was disrespecting that woman, and I had to, you know.
I had to fight to prove my love. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. It was four or five dudes. And in the end of it, this is the only injury that I had.
That's the only thing I can't. No black eye. Look at my face. I'm still pretty. I'll figure that out.
Don't tell that story again.
Okay, I won't tell that story.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, of course, is based in the Bay Area, so we got to talk to Golden State Warriors. They're, of course, one of the more interesting teams coming into the season. Draymond Green gets his deal done. Jordan Poole gets traded. Chris Paul comes in. Just as a general outlook, like Chris Paul coming in, he's trying to shake off the reputation and he's fighting off time. He's fighting off, you know, like I said, even his own reputation with the Warrior players as being really this honorary guy. He's even fighting off the perception that he's coming off the bench because he doesn't want to even really talk about that. How do you see the personalities in this working? Steph, Draymond, Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, how do you see all that working out?
Well, I think for Chris, this is the first time in his career where he has to fit in. Right?
Yeah.
This is different and this is unique. And it probably, you know, some ways makes him nervous, right? Like excited too. But like this is the first time that he's not the voice in the room, so to speak. Right. There's other voices. They've been there. They've been successful without you. Kind of like KD coming in a sense. Right. Like, and so where you're not the guy, not the guy next to the guy. You're not the guy next to the guy. They got these banners, these things that you haven't had. And so I think he feels like this new kid that moved and is thrust into this school where they've got a lot of greatness already at the school and they don't necessarily need you, but maybe you need them. And so I'm curious to see how he is embraced, curious to see how he takes in everything. I do expect him to start.
Really?
I do. Yeah. And I think it's like 5-minute spurts. I don't know that they really want his minutes to be high, but I think they're going to try it. You know, I could be wrong, but that's the gist that I'm getting. This isn't an opinion. This is just what I'm hearing, that he's expected to start. He's never not started his whole career. And I'm going to put some respect on his name, man. Like, Chris Paul is a future Hall of Famer. His basketball IQ is among the greatest of all time, if not the greatest. And you put him and Draymond on the floor together. IQ-wise, and it's not like he has to carry the team. He has to complement the team.
Right.
I think he could do really well there. I also think that Chris Paul has done a great job getting the best out of some players. I think he took Book to a higher level, right? He took the Thunder to a higher level, which was very, very unexpected. Like, I'm still shocked that they made the playoffs. And I just think that for Kuminga, for Moody, if they allow him to put his arm around them, that he could push them to another level too. So I do think that while Jordan Poole is a phenomenal player and he could end up leading the league in scoring next year, I really like how Moses Moody fits in with the Warriors. And I think next year will be he's not getting talked about, but it's time to, like, take his game up to a different level that he seems to always take up in the playoffs, but not in the regular season. And then Kuminga is just like this scary talent.
Yeah.
You're just waiting to erupt. You're waiting for his basketball IQ to hit. And so I think for Chris, like, I think the best thing that the Warriors could do, whether I expect, you know, Klay and Steph to be this and Draymond has to be this, is like, welcome him in. Make sure he's comfortable the same way you would want to be at your end of your career if you end up going somewhere else, and just squeeze the best out of Chris Paul, because if they do accept him, I mean, that's like another coach on the floor, man. Like, he ain't got to carry the team, but he could make the team better just with his mind.
That's a concern that I have for Chris Paul, is that, like, the first point is that he's not going to be the voice that people are automatically going to, you know, to go to and gravitate to. Like, they have that. And I'll bring you up an example. I won't say the player's name, but a GM that I talked to recently, and I was just speaking about this, and he brought up an example from a different player for a different championship team. And he said, a Hall of Fame player comes into this championship locker room, hasn't won anything.
Yeah.
And he says, man, these guys treat me like I'm in high school. Like, I don't know anything, because they won and he didn't. And he wasn't used to not having that flex in the locker room and not having his voice to be the only voice that matters. That's my concern with Chris Paul, is because I don't think he knows when to be quiet.
Yeah. Well, he's always had young teams, too.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first team I think he's played on. This is the first team that he plays on where there's some other grown men in the room. A lot of them. Houston, young, right? Relatively young. Oklahoma City, super young. Clippers, right. Young. Right, he's a Hornets. Him and West.
Everybody was young there.
Yeah. So it's like this is the first time he's with an OG team. So in a sense, I think maybe it takes some pressure off of him because he doesn't have to carry all that weight all the time. He doesn't have to be everyone to everybody. Like, if anything, he accentuates it. And instead of having to carry all the water, he could carry some of it or jump in when he needs to. But I think they would be fools to not listen to somebody of him, of his background, of his I feel like when you compete the way he competes, there's like I think Chris Paul and Draymond and trying to think of some other players.
Clay is a competitor. You know what I mean?
No. What I'm saying is there are certain players you hate playing against.
Oh yeah.
But you know, PJ Tucker, right? But you have him on your team. You're like,
oh, you love him.
I love him. And I do feel like even with all the like there's some depth to the Warriors Chris Paul rivalry, right?
Absolutely.
Those days with the Clippers when they eliminated him during the Donald Sterling saga.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different when he's on your team. Right. And so
in theory it is. I think you're right.
But you're right, Vinny, in theory it is, and we gotta see. I think it behooves and you know, this is where I think there also needs to be respectfully some growth with Steph, where that's his guy. They're both from North Carolina. Steph grew up idolizing him. Like Steph has to make sure it works. Steph has to make sure he's comfortable. Steph has to make sure he's embraced. And I think if they
start, and I get what you're saying. I do think that Steph, I won't say Steph skates because that's the wrong way to put it. But Steph has to embrace being more of a vocal leader and kind of, you know, he leaves that heavy lifting to Draymond a lot of times. And Draymond can drive you to June and he can drive you off a cliff. Like we've seen it, you know, in some instances throughout the course of this run. And Steph has kind of been the guy that hasn't always had to speak up per se. He does it every now and again, but it doesn't feel like that's his natural setting. But if you have Chris Paul and Steph Curry in a starting lineup, I don't think that's going to be the starting lineup for too long. That's going to be too small, not athletic enough, not too much, not enough defense. And I feel like Chris Paul, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, you brought it up yourself. He'd be better with the Kamingas, better with the Moses Moody's. He'd be better coming up, maybe playing 25 minutes.
I think he ultimately ends up playing a lot of minutes with those guys anyway.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, I mean, if you're the first player that comes out, then you're going to end up playing with the probably more minutes with the second group anyway. So maybe I'm a Chris Paul fan quietly. I don't know. I have a lot of respect for Chris Paul. So I'm gonna give it a chance and see. But because I do think the one thing is like this ain't 80s NBA or 90s NBA where the center oftentimes is. But then what do you do when Embiid comes to town? What do you do when Joker comes to town? What do you do? Because there are some teams that have some significant centers, some significant size. But we'll see. I guess we'll see preseason game one, right? But it certainly, I don't know that he's ever come off the bench his whole career. So maybe they want to keep it that way, and we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Chris Paul will be, I think, 39 in May.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can only imagine. That's a tough one.
The passing in the offense that comes from Chris and Draymond. Like offensively, I think there'll be a lot to deal with when they're all on the floor together. And I think ultimately at the end of the game, Chris is on the floor anyway. Right?
I see it a little differently, but I get what you're saying. I just see it.
It's a good problem, man.
Ultimately, it's a good problem to have for Steve Kerr. If Chris Paul has it going, and you got to choose between Chris Paul and Clay, or Chris Paul and Wiggs, or you know what I mean? Or you having to go for size for Looney?
I mean, I think I'll probably have to go small. I mean, I think, and then Looney is the type of dude where it's just like, what do y'all want me to do? Like, the path of least resistance, right?
Mark, you are more of an optimist about that particular situation.
Yeah, probably more than anybody.
Probably so. I think, and it's funny, I think I'll be in the Bay opening night, not speaking out of turn. I think I'll be in the Bay opening night, I think, when they play Phoenix. You tell me, Mark, we will have dinner somewhere and some good wine. One of the benefits, the only benefit of the pandemic that I had was Mark Spears telling me, try this wine, buy this wine. And then after a minute, he was like, man, buy a wine fridge. So I bought a wine fridge. Once I bought a wine fridge, I had to fill up the wine fridge. So I have a wine fridge full of red wine. I'm not usually a white drinker.
I am in the summertime.
Okay. I'm more of a cab drinker, especially this time of year.
Oh, so summertime is a good time for Sancerre.
Okay. See that. Okay, y'all, this is going to get bleeped out, but every time Mark says something extra bougie, they're going to bleep it out.
Oh.
I say this every time that Mark says something that's a little bit over my head or over everybody's head. You know what I say? That's some spear.
the great Branford Marsalis introduced me to Sancerre at Soho House.
Branford Marsalis, another guy that Mark introduced me to during the playoffs last year that I had dinner with. So thank you, Mark. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Mark J. Spears. On whatever social media platform you got, that is Mark J. Spears on Twitter or X or Threads or any of those things that we own now. Also, Instagram. Don't forget to look for his work on Anscape. Watch the Conversations Project on Hulu.
Conversations Project. Please watch.
Please watch it. Hopefully next season he'll invite me to be on there, because he had a writer on there and I was kind of disappointed that he didn't ask me to be on there. But either way, I'm not taking it personal. That's my big brother. I want you to know I love you. I appreciate you, bro. And I'm looking forward to that invitation.
All right, man. Stop punching people.
That's Mark. Thanks to John and Evan and Ron and everybody that works behind the scenes that does the videos and everybody that helps out. Don't forget, next week, I'm not sure if Jake and Dan will be back with No Cap Room. If not, I will be here. So it will be the end of the FIBA World Cup. So probably no cap room next week. I'm Vincent Goodwill. Y'all hear the music. See you guys next week. Be safe.